You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
On December 18th, for one night only, come see formerly on hiatus Vancouver band SSRIs reunite live at the Wise Hall. The lineup will feature the membership of the 2010 LP Effeminate Godzilla-sized wind chimes. Don't go see Star Wars, come see SSRI's reunion show. Guest bands include TV Ugly, Blessed, and Redrick Sultan. Tickets are $10. Check out the SSRIs on Facebook for more information. This is one night only, so don't miss out.
I'm Colin Mockery.
And I'm Deb McGrath. For 8 years, we've been going online to choose gifts like chickens and goats for children and families living in poverty. Gifts that provide food, income, and a hopeful future.
All thanks to World Vision's gift catalog for gifts that change lives.
Go to worldvision.ca/gifts.
Hello, hello. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. This show is A Face for Radio. I am your host, Eric Coates, and today on the show, I have a very special guest, Miss Brittany Lee Bachman, better known as Britt Bachman, the editor-in-chief at Discorder. She also hosts co-hosts part-time once a month a radio show on Co-op Radio. Our friends, brothers in arms, called A Better World.
Make a
better world. And she also works at Vivo and is an artist.
It's true. All those things are true.
And a friend of the show, here for the first time. How's it going?
So far,
thank you
so
for
good.
Coming.
Thank you. Thank you for showing up on time.
It's my pleasure. I mean, you had to get out of a memory foam mattress to be here.
It was true.
The least I could do.
It's true.
So, you have brought some music for us?
Yes, I've brought some music. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but I have a stack of CDs here.
Can you tell us how you got that stack of CDs?
Yeah. So I'm currently cat sitting for the month, and I'm not going to say who it's for, but it's for a couple of artists who are experimental, mostly with sound and noise, but some video as well. And they have a stack of CDs, but only like 30 CDs or so. So you know that these are the most important CDs, like the ones that they purged over the years and came out with this glorious batch of 30 CDs or so. So I brought like 10 of them.
All right.
And yeah.
You just picked that at random.
That I picked at random. There's some things I recognize and other things that are live recordings from shows in places that I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's great. You know that CITR is doing 24 hours of radio art in January?
Yeah. I actually just read that yesterday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you can maybe, you know, get your friends to play some stuff.
They would go crazy over that. They're actually big fans of radio art and sometimes participants on Soundscape on Co-op Radio as well. So using radio as art.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I am going to play some music. That's not radio art. It's
I'm
just
sure
music.
It's radio art. We're going to make it radio art.
Yeah. Well, I picked this first song I think you'll enjoy. I hope you'll like the other songs. But this first song is by Bo Harwood, who was the guy who made all the music for John Cassavetes films, starting with Minnie and Moskowitz. So his 70s and 80s movies. And he started out as just an audio technician. He was just a guy that Cassavetes liked. And he was like this hippie fella who was hanging around in L.A. after leaving the San Francisco scene. And he was a musician, and he embodied a lot of Cassavetes' ethos for making films and to making the music that they made. So that a lot of it was improvised. A lot of it was, you know, yeah, it was
okay.
Independent. So he this song plays in the movie The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, which I've never seen. There's two versions of it. And apparently it's not one of Cassavetes' better films. He was like trying hard to experiment with genre because his movies fall like very strictly into one style. So he was trying to, as his style. So I think he was trying to like expand it.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's not good. I don't know. There's two cuts, one that's like 2.5 hours long and one that's 1 hour and 40 minutes. And this song plays in it. And then I've got two other songs that I enjoy that are also old tunes. So we're going to play those after and then keep on chatting with BB, Britt Bachman, and then she'll play some tunes for us too. So the song is called Almost in Love with You by Bo Harwood, John Cassavetes, who wrote the lyrics, and Anthony Harris, who did the arrangements.
I've been pointed out by people. My name is Mud. I've been dreaming all the dreams and dancing in the evening. Could fill me. What can I do? I'm not, but almost in love with you. Thank you.
from the street and all human-like zones. I'd had it. I was mush to the bones. I covered the windows. I was taking no calls. Then I thought for a month inside the alien walls. Now I know they don't tell you so. Now I know they don't tell you so. Now I know they don't tell you so. But I can recall it all. I was at a loss. What can I do now? Well, I called up a girl I knew for so many years. I'd seen her in shock. I'd seen the last of her tears. I admired her style from her toes to her brain. She accepted my plan, and so she caught the next train. Now I know.
Oh, they don't
tell you so. Now I know.
Oh, they don't
tell you so. Now I know. Welcome home. We would secretly smile inside our surgical mask, but we were serious too. We accomplished our task. Her schedule was followed. A daughter was born, and so her mother departed. I was left with her form. Now I know.
You
so now I know.
Oh,
they don't tell you so. Now I know.
Oh,
they don't tell you so. But I can recall it all. This is where it counts. Her education's begun. I'm intent on success. Her breathtaking beauty brings out my best. I once knew true love. She won't know another. Life is renewed. My little girl is my lover. Now I know.
Oh,
they don't tell you so. Now I know.
Oh,
they don't tell you so. Now I know.
All right, we are back. You are listening to A Face for Radio. I'm Eric, and I'm here with Britt Bachman, chatting, hanging out. And we kicked it off with the song Almost in Love with You by Bo Harwood. And it's actually Jackie Sheldon who sings that song from... It's not really an album, I guess. It's sort of an album called Last Room on the Left, because apparently Bo Harwood just felt recently like, why not put out all the music that I've made?
So it was like sort of a fast track soundtrack.
Yeah, like he picked out pretty much all of the songs, except for one that I really like that he didn't deem worthy, but whatever. And just put him out on his website. And you can buy them off his website.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was...
A way to get money off of it.
Yeah, it was like $10 for 20 songs.
Yeah,
pretty good. And you get a little history, like a little 60-page document about his relationship with Cassavetes. Anyways, then we listened to the song Acute Schizophrenia Paranoia Blues by The Kinks off of their 1971 album Muswell Hillbillies. Great album, which I just listened to for the first time last week and I've probably listened to like 15 times since then. It's called Muswell Hillbillies because The Kinks are from Muswell Hill, suburb of North London. And the album basically takes like the sound of Sunny Afternoon, that hit, and develops it over the course of an album, and it's a lot of little vignettes. It's possibly, you know, some of his best writing. This song I find hilarious because he's like talking about how his neighbors are KGB spies and basically just the paranoia of the Cold War, except on a really, really, really low, like suburban English level, just like the most petty things. And then we listen to the song The Plan by Richard Hell and the Voidoids off of their 1977 album Blank Generation, which I decided to play because as serendipitously, Britt asked if there was like a musician that I try to emulate when writing music, and I said that it was funny because I decided to play this song because when I heard it, it was like the songs that I've been trying to write this year. This is just a perfected version of what I was trying to write, and it was written 40 years ago, almost. But anyways, Richard Hell, another coolly named person, him and his friend Tom Harris, back when he was Richard something or other, left Kentucky or Kansas and went to New York and picked the names of their favorite poets to name themselves after. And Tom Harris became Tom Verlaine, after Paul Verlaine, and became the guy in television. And then Richard Hell picked the name Hell from the poem and collection of poems, A Season in Hell, by Arthur Rimbaud. And he also styled his hair, apparently after Arthur Rimbaud.
Rimbaud? Is that how we're going to pronounce it?
How do you want to
pronounce it? Rimbaud?
Okay.
Come on, French. French major over there.
Sure. Arthur Rimbaud. yeah, and Richard Hell's hair inspired the hair of the punk movement. So It's really just trying to rip off a 16-year-old French kid.
Well, we've talked about this before when we were talking about names.
Yeah.
Remember when we
were, yeah.
And we talked about naming people after, you know, favorite authors, writers.
Mm-hmm.
What was some of the ones that you said?
Well, who would you choose right now?
Who would I choose right now?
A poet to name yourself after.
Well, obviously Oscar Wilde.
He didn't write a lot of poetry, though.
He wrote a lot of like plays, though.
That's true.
He wrote a lot. Does it have to be poetry specific?
I think so.
Like
for this exercise,
Sylvia Plath.
That's good.
Yeah. It also could
be Plath.
Like Britt Plath. I mean, it doesn't really sound.
You'd have to go with Brittany Plath.
You just want to keep saying my name Brittany, don't you?
No, I just think it would like.
Brittany Plath.
Yeah, like there's more flow.
Britt Plath. Brittany Plath. I don't know. I don't think either one of them works at all. No.
No.
No. Well, which one would you be? Who would you be?
I said Auden last time.
Yeah.
But I think I could pull off O'Hara. Eric O'Hara. I think I could rock that.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, Frank's cool. So you actually came on this show because you were listening to the show last week. And when I asked the would you rather question, of would you rather live until 80, having to sleep 8 hours a day, or until 55, having to sleep 4 hours a day. So you spend the same amount of awake time on this earth. You wrote in saying, complaining,
yeah,
that we hadn't discussed an important variable in the equation.
Yeah, well, the time that exists outside of your own body, so the generations.
Yeah.
that happen. And then since then, I've actually thought of more reasons why I think you guys were completely wacky. Because, like, well, I mean, you had all said you'd want to live until 55.
Well, I think they all sort of, like, I know Shay previously was of the 80 crew. Like, I think she just didn't fight for it.
Okay. Well,
like, I think I'm the only one out of them that's still. Yeah, I think I just, you know, they're on my show. They felt an obligation to agree with me or something. My overbearing personality just, yeah, something like that.
I don't feel any need to agree with you.
Good. I'm glad.
Good.
That's wonderful. That's important.
Yeah, so my thought was that if you live until 80 and you'd still be sleeping a lot, but I mean not really too much, and during those hours you would be able to see so much more progress over those 30 years or so, kind of the difference of decades and seeing how society grows.
Yeah.
But then I was also thinking, if you only lived until 55, like, you would really have to plan out your hours to make them count. You'd have to make sure you're living in a city where there are things happening all the time and where you can still get really good food at all hours of the day. And, you know?
Yeah. No, that's true.
It would take a lot more planning, and I feel like that would also maybe just stress you out more, because there's more expectations to make the time count if you know that you're going to be dying at 55.
Yeah, but, you know, I was watching, I don't know what I watched this. Oh, no, it was in, I watched the Barbarian Invasions.
Okay.
It was a Quebecois movie from 2003 by Denis Arcand that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film. First Canadian feature film to win it. And the main character at one point just goes, when you start getting older and you start counting down decades instead of counting up, you're like counting down the time you have left instead of the time that you've been around.
Is that a real thing that happens?
Apparently, that you get to a certain age and you're just like figuring out, this is the last time that I'm gonna do such and such thing, this is the last time that I can go do this, like this is the last time that I'll visit this place, that I'll go bungee jumping, you know, whatever it is. So I think once you, like, if you have 55, you can still, hopefully, if you're healthy, you know, fully functional, can do all the things that you could have done before, right? So you wouldn't, so you would have a similar, like, decay after that.
Oh, my gosh. But, I mean, 55 is not old. This is another thing. You guys were talking, like, 55 is the turning point. I wouldn't say 55 is the turning point.
No,
I would say,
I know.
Like,
that's an issue with the question.
Yeah. It was an issue that you guys didn't talk about either. Because I just feel like,
like, you got a lot left when you're 55.
Oh, for sure. I mean, my mother is over that 55 mark. And I just literally, when you guys were talking about it, saw her raging in my head, thinking that her life is over after 55.
Yeah, no, it's a very, like, youthful arrogance in that statement. But the thing is, I was thinking about the whole, like, what you would see in the future.
Yeah.
But part of the idea would be that if you only sleep the 4 hours a day, you'd have all this time to follow up on. You read and understand things, so you would learn a lot more about, hopefully, if you planned your time out properly, what came before you.
Oh,
and as such, you would have an understanding of, you know, previous history.
But
that would give you a similar sense of finding out new things. Like, you would find out new things, they just wouldn't be in the future, they'd be in the past.
Are you more interested in knowing about the past than the future?
I don't know if I'm neither here nor there.
It wasn't like a question that has a right or wrong answer. But
yeah,
it's just there's a certain, like, element of curiosity or, like, a spark that it's, like, similar with sculpture in that there's, like, types of people that create sculptures by adding more material onto something. They build a sculpture versus sculptures that take away. And so similarly with history, you know, you have people who really want to know what came before, and other people who are really focused on, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world that want to make things that fly.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's positives in both. But I feel like every generation probably has this thought, but it's something that gives me a lot of anxiety. And it's the fact that at this point in history, we have at least 2,500 years of well-documented history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just in, like, the Western canon. You know, outside of that, you have, you know, like, who knows how much more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all that, this burden that I feel of history just pushing down on me, that I need to know these things. Like, for example, when I read something, I hardly ever read new books, like bestsellers, because I feel like it feels like I can't read this if I haven't read, you know, like War and Peace. If I haven't read Moby Dick, then I won't have I need to read everything that came before me to be able to understand where I am now, and it gives me a huge amount of anxiety.
Context. You want to create context for things.
Not only, it's just like, it's like if you read older books, they're always making references to Greek people that no one our age knows. I mean, people our age do know.
Yeah.
But most people don't, you know, don't refer to them. And, like, Pericles isn't talked about in regular conversation. But he's, like, mentioned all the time. So, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I get that for sure. I've had lists of books that I felt that I needed to read before I could read other books. I had this discussion with somebody at Shambhala once. And so
oh, really?
Forgive me for the New Agey response that I'm about to bring to this.
Shambhala being the electronic music festival in the Okanagan?
Oh, no, Salmo in the Kootenays. So at Shambhala a few years ago, had this discussion, and I was explaining how, yeah, there was this sort of frantic rat race trying to get more knowledge, more context. And this person responded by saying, all of the context and all of the words that came before created the surroundings and the earth that you now exist in and the society that you now existed in. And so those words are already imprinted in your bones and your skin and your blood.
Okay, I get that.
I'm not saying that it's true or that's
no.
It's how I feel. It is an argument.
That's how you feel? You agree with this person?
I said that's not how I feel.
Well,
but it's a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with the skin and bone thing. However, there is a good point that all of this, you know, where we are today is built on the foundation of what came before, for better or for worse, you know, and the good and the bad things that existed previously. But just because it's, you know, it's built from it and that it exists upon that doesn't mean that we understand what came before.
But does that mean that we pulled out the best sort of lessons or?
No.
No.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's, you know, we've been making the same mistakes for millennia.
Totally. It's like good things and bad things creating this swampy soup situation that is now the present.
Yeah, which was probably the similar thing. Like, the thing that irritates me about this anxiety is I can imagine some, like, guy in, like, 1812 just being like, I feel the pressure of history upon us. There's the swamp of good and bad creating the present. It's just like, I want to feel like it's an original thought, but I know that people have just been struggling with this. Like, I feel like 8,000 years ago, you know, and, like, I don't know, the Russian steppe. There's some, you know, like, pre-modern babushka sitting there struggling.
Pretty modern babushka.
Yeah, with these similar thoughts.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. Yeah.
But then it just sounds arrogant to be like, you know, we have so much more history after those people. So it's like the burden's actually harder on me.
Or it's releasing the burden and being like, I'm going to focus on enjoying the present and looking to the future.
I know that's a scary thing to do, though.
Mm-hmm. Can we listen to more music?
Yeah, okay. So we've got something that you brought from the Top 30 collection here. And we're going to play the first song by the by Mats Lindstrom and Soren Rundolph, who I am guessing they're Swedish.
Okay.
And the song is called "När Gucken Gull." No idea what that means.
Me neither.
Off of the album "A Wonder of Beauty and Efficiency," sounds very Scandinavian. Released in 1995 by Filkingen Records.
Okay.
All right, thank you. And then we're going to listen to some Canadian content. Enjoy.
Thank you. these four walls that align and you remain. In this closure, in this infinite desire, you advise and you attend to this spiral.
Thank you. there. This ad caught your attention. It also caught the attention of the coolest people from Squamish to Bellingham, music fans, students, and members of various cultural communities. If you want your ad to do the same, advertise with CITR and Discorder. If you've got a rad new ad or just something you want to share, whether in print, on air, or online, promote your wares, services, or events with us. Contact us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 till noon for Transition State with your host, Adam. Transition State showcases high-quality music with a special guest interview from the pharmaceutical sciences. Frank discussions of music that can save the world.
All right, we're back on CITR 101.9 FM. Show's a face for radio. We are here with Miss Britt Bachman chatting. That's you. What'd you think of Mats Lindstrom and Soren Runolf's A Wonder of Beauty and Efficiency, the song?
Yeah, how do you say that?
Nardgokingol.
I really liked it, actually. We searched it, and it was described the genre as ilby. I like that.
Damn straight.
I thought it was relaxing. I thought it was a good pick. I thought it was reflecting sort of, you know, the noises that we hear on a regular basis and don't necessarily think of putting into a musical composition, but they did it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was great.
Thank you for bringing that in.
My pleasure. We have a stack of CDs here, and they're all quite weird and obscure.
Man, we're going to play one more. I want to play this song, and we don't have a lot of time before the next show, Transition State, up in a few minutes. So I'd like to thank you.
Thank you.
For coming.
For leaving the memory foam.
For leaving the memory foam to come hang out on the show. It's been a pleasure. We had a good chat.
We did, yeah.
What do you think of the chat?
I think the chat was really good. Okay. I always feel like off-air chats are kind of the gem. If you could record like the in-between when we chat.
Yeah, if we had bloopers.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. Mm-hmm. So, percentage-wise, I said that this would be at least 10% as good as staying in the memory foam.
Yes.
How do you feel?
I feel like it's a bit more than that, actually, because, yeah, like maybe like a 20% even.
You're welcome. All right. We're going to play the song I Fall in Love Too Easily by another Swedish person called Lars Gulen of his album Guldkorn. And then if we have time, I want to play a song because I started watching a thing about Ray Davies, and he's talking about like a thing that I think he thinks about a lot is how rock and roll displaced big band music. Mm. And I was thinking about big band music is so bizarre because it's wholly dependent on the venue.
Completely, yeah.
It's like the only, well, it's like the main, the only genre I can think of like the 20th century that it was a huge thing. That completely like does not exist anymore.
That's true. Exists in churches sometimes.
I guess so, but it can exist in like the same way because it needs that sort of like have a ball.
Concert hall.
Yeah, so I have this album that I got for free out of a record bin at Zulu Records called Waltzes You Saved for Me by Wayne King, the Waltz King, who was apparently cut out to be a band leader, as the back says. And there's a song called 3 o'clock in the Morning that I really like because it has some like Hawaiian guitar sounds in it. Okay. So if we have time, we'll play that. If not, I'm sorry. It's been a great show. Thanks again, BB. And we'll see you again next week. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.